the so-called mothership. We have Ryan Fuku. How can I pronounce this?
Fukunaga.
Thank you. From Free Geek Toronto. We have Charlie from Free IT Athens. We have Joel Esler, an academic who's been studying the organizational methods of these types of organizations and has some interesting observations. And we have Zach from Free Geek Arkansas. So they're going to explain to you how they make these things work, these organizations work, how you can get one started in your town or city, and if there's already one in your city, how you can participate. So thanks for coming. This is going to be interesting.
Good morning. My name is Dan Bartholomew. I am the executive director for Free Geek in Portland. Free Geek was started in the year 2000, so we've been around for about 18 years. We started with four guys with an idea, and the idea was there is planned obsolescence in the technology market, and every 2 years everybody trades out what they have for technology, and it ends up wherever it ends up. It could go to China, it could go to India, it could go to a landfill. Meanwhile, there are 17% of the United States that do not have a device and are not connected to the internet. 39% of rural America is not connected to the internet or even have devices. That 39%, even if they have a device, it could be a 2 to 5 hour drive to get a new device and or get their device repaired. So they took those two problems and they faced them off to each other. And they said, why don't we take the devices that are perfectly fine, that are just a couple years old, refurbish them, get them to be nearly new again, and give them to the people that need them so that we can bridge the digital divide. We can get those 17% of America and 39% of rural America to start working on things like curing cancer, cleaning the water, removing the landfills that they're filling with these 150,000 devices that we are getting rid of every single day. That was the dream. So we started out at Free Geek in Portland with about 2,000 square feet and four people. Over the last 18 years, we've grown to be about 45 people in staff. We serve about 4,000 volunteers a year, and we have about 25,000 square feet that is refurbishing about 1.5 million pounds of e-waste every single year. Part of our mission was to try and give birth to other Free Geeks that are across the United States. There are 11 Free Geeks across the United States, one in Oslo, Norway, of all places. There are about 78 nonprofit refurbishers in the United States. We have a great representation here of the other Free Geeks that were started. We are not franchising these Free Geeks. All we do is we provide a charter, we give them guidance, and we help them get started and give them guidance along the way, hopefully, to get things going and keep things moving as best as we possibly can. I can't tell you what this means to our community in Portland, as well as the United States. What we're doing is we're changing lives. We're changing lives by doing technology refurbishment. There was a woman that came in, she was a teenager in high school. Kayla was her name. And Kayla came in and she gave 24 hours of community service to us. And as a result of that, we give her a computer. We give away thousands of devices every single year. We serve between 6 and 8 nonprofits every single week, providing them with all the technology that they need. But Kayla came in after her 24 hours of service, and I gave her her laptop. She started working on it. She was going through her class, and she was crying. And I said, Kayla, why are you crying? You just got a laptop. And she said, you don't understand. I've been doing all of my papers on my phone. And I've been standing outside of my school so that I had Wi-Fi connection in order to upload my papers when they were done. That's what Free Geek does. What Free Geek does is connects the world and makes a difference in that way. I'm talking from my perspective. I'd really like to hear from the panel. So if we could start, Zach, maybe you could start us, Zach, and bring us across and talk about what you're doing in your community.
So my community in Fayetteville, Arkansas is much smaller than most of these other communities in general. We're about the tenth the size that you are. We'll do probably 150,000 pounds of e-waste this year. And it's very much in the similar mold. Lots and lots of people in our community are rural. You know, something like 90% of the state of Arkansas is completely rural. So even though we live in an urban center, we service everyone throughout the state. We send computers to the Delta. We send copiers and things like that to nonprofits that otherwise, you know, couldn't have access to that tech at all. It's thousands of dollars for them. And that's usually the difference between a person and a piece of technology. So we're really fortunate in that way to be able to impact those lives. We've migrated a lot over the years from just having whole desktop computers, couldn't find a laptop anywhere, to now having some, and it's been very transformative for us. So we're able to connect with and touch thousands of people every single year, and these are people that wouldn't have any computing resources whatsoever.
Thank you. Joel?
I am no longer actively involved with the Free Geek organization, but I did work with one, and the one Charlie is with now, Free IT Athens, for I think it was 7 years or something like that. And when I began working with this group, it was in this school building that was basically falling apart. We had to put umbrellas in the ceiling to keep water away from the servers, and we had a really good space, though, and I saw like a lot of things that were going on there that to me it wasn't really about technology so much as it was about community building and community organizing and getting people the help and knowledge and understanding of technology that they need. And I have so many stories to share over the years with Free IT Athens. I saw it grow from that old school building to now like a shopping center, which was a goal that we had originally to get out of that building and have like a front-facing space. And I think it's doing pretty well from what I can tell. Charlie can speak more about that, I think.
Yeah, we're doing really well. We moved to a shopping center, so we have walkability. People, before we were in a warehouse, when I got involved, we were in a warehouse. So we were on the bus line, which if you're starting one of these organizations, do keep transportation in mind. Being on a bus line is so very helpful. But we were in a warehouse, so people would take the bus to come out to this warehouse. There wasn't really anything, unless they were recording music. Nothing else out there. And now, you know, there's several stores and restaurants and, you know, nail salons. So you can come out and shop and get your technology fixed. But, no, we're doing fantastic. It's about 2,000 square feet. Last year we recycled 19 tons of e-waste, which is two T-Rexes worth of e-waste, I learned. Last year we had 126 volunteers serving over 5,000 hours to our community. And we have 18 staff members, which I don't know if you knew that. That is tremendous. Yeah, so we're an entire volunteer-run organization. So I'm a volunteer, Joel was a volunteer, everyone in there was volunteering, and having 18 people who are stepping up and saying, okay, I'm going to take responsibility and leadership in this organization is just mind-blowing, and I'm forever grateful. So this year so far, we've distributed 200 computers. So I don't know if this is true of the other organizations, but free software is in our mission, and that's very, very important to us. So as well as bridging the digital divide and eliminating e-waste. So that's 200 people who have free software in their homes and free software alternatives. Yeah, so it's, thank you. And we're well on track. And that's just through our store. So we have a store where computers start out at $15. We try to keep that as affordable as possible. So that's not counting community grant programs, or we also give away computers to volunteers for meeting certain milestones. So that's just that. Yeah. And I also have so many stories that I wish I could share, but I'm taking too much time, so I'm going to pass it over.
Thanks. So I'm here from Free Geek Toronto. Pretty much everyone ever said, except change pounds to kilograms, you know. but the one big difference that does distinguish us slightly different from everyone else is that we've had to shift it because of the way the environment in our in Ontario, in the province, is we've had to switch to become a what's called a employment social enterprise, which means that our focus is on having volunteers also help with the refurbishment and recycling, but it's also giving people the opportunity to get jobs who face barriers to employment. So you get people who, you know, have had long absences or coming into tech for as a second career, or they're newcomers to the country and they don't have the Canadian, the quote-unquote experience to make it in North America to get their first job. So they come to us and we are able to kind of give them that opportunity to kind of move forward. You know, we still have, like, we've sold, I think by now this time of the year, we're about 200 computers like everybody else, and I can't do the conversion, but we're at about a metric ton of e-waste we've done. I don't know what that is actually in pounds. And it's really just kind of, so we do all that stuff, but it's really kind of us also incorporating this thing of like really helping people, you know, kind of get back on their feet and stuff like that. So, you know, bridging the digital divide in a way that also includes getting people, you know, employment and really kind of using that opportunity either further into education or into other employment goals. And so, yeah.
Great. Thanks, Ryan. I think you heard a theme across the entire panelists that it's really about the community. It's about what we're doing in the community. At Free Geek Portland, we do about 6,000 hours of education every single year. And it's really about, but it's about the face that's in front of you at the time. Many times we're working with people that are coming out of challenging situations, they're coming out of homelessness, they have no device, they have no way of making an impact in the world that they really want to make. So teaching those basic job skills, teaching those basic, you know, show up on time, don't break anything, listen to your boss, take a break when you need to take a break, those basic job skills is a lot of what we're doing. I'd like to ask the panel, maybe we start at Ryan and come this way this time. What is the impact that you think you're making in your community? What kinds of things do you see on a daily basis? And Charlie, this is a great time to tell your stories.
So we have a core staff of about 8 people, and all of them except for myself face some kind of barrier to employment. And we have people transitioning out of our organization, you know, so we have people like 20 people coming through because they're just kind of using us as a stepping stone and going through. And the amount of you know, confidence they get from just being in a workplace but being very supported and learning about tech, because, you know, these are people who may, you know, like, we have one gentleman who came in who, you know, knew how to use a computer, but, you know, wasn't really that confident. And now he's one of our best salespeople, because when people come in, he's able to empathize with their lack of tech knowledge and really kind of, you know, talk to them on their level while also being very honest with the what the machines have to offer. And so that really kind of puts people who are digitally literate or, you know, not comfortable with technology in a space where they know that they can come here and really kind of learn from that. And, you know, you can't put that and quantify how important that is to us for him. But in terms of what we do in our community, like, we really try and make sure that we're getting out into the communities that need us rather than the people who find us. We, you know, because we have a lot of people come in who are, you know, tech enthusiasts, hobbyists, hackers, who really can kind of take advantage of the tech to its largest degree, but we have to really make an effort to go out to the communities where there's a little bit more social isolation or there's a language barrier. You know, like New York, Toronto has communities where people, their language is a huge barrier, and so we have to make a real effort to kind of, you know, meet somebody there who's an enthusiast in a certain community that has a language skill who can then take our items to the community, to people who really, really need it the most, and if they didn't have, we didn't have this kind of link with them, wouldn't even know we existed because, you know, because we don't all speak, you know, 1,000 languages. So yeah, so it's really, that's really how we kind of, you know, Broadway kind of feel, we get into our hands.
Thank you.
So our impact in the community, I don't really have a metric, I wish I did, for that, but I have amazing stories. Employment's huge. I had no idea until I started volunteering how big of a, well, of course I knew employment's a big deal, but how much a nonprofit like this can make a difference in someone's, you know, job, professional life. To the point where recently we've had so many people go from not having a job to gainfully employed with full benefits that are actually having trouble staying open during business hours because I can't find anyone to open up. Yeah, exactly. Which is an amazing problem to have. One of those problems I'm grateful for. But language is a huge, huge barrier that, and I've definitely had to rope clients into translating for other clients. I've been in that position. But the little things is what warms my heart. So one of my favorite experiences is a young family came in, and out of respect for her privacy, I'll call her D. And she came in, and she, with her toddler and her husband, and they were getting internet in their home for the very first time. And I got to show them the shelves and answer their questions. We picked out their very first computer. And, you know, together we set up the username and password, and we learned, you know, how to use, we're using Lubuntu. So we, you know, learned Lubuntu. And she asked me if I could help her set up her very first email address. And so we set up her very first email address, and then she asked if we could work on writing a resume. And I still get emails from her about the job she got from writing a resume together. And it's those, like, little, you know, face-to-face moments that just, that's the difference you're making in the community. And it's incredible. Now, we're at the point where we've kind of had to look inward, so we're not doing a lot of outreach that we should be to find those communities who aren't able to find us. But in the past, and I'm sure Joel can talk about this, y'all have done amazing outreach. And I'm sad we didn't do the slideshows. We were going to do a slideshow, but it would take too much time, because I have pictures of very young Joel in community outreach things. So I love it.
I probably can't pick one story. Especially since I've stepped away and I've looked at other organizations. But I am a community worker, so I have like 10 years of organizing experience in this area. But I always viewed the Free Geek model as like the Food Not Bombs of computers, if anybody's familiar with that model. As you're taking discarded computers, you're getting them to people in need, and the secret recipe there, like vegan vegetarian food with Food Not Bombs and rescued food, is free software. That's what ties people to each other and community instead of like a corporation. But some outcomes I've seen from other Free Geeks and preliminary evidence from my dissertation work has been actually strikingly similar to community gardens, believe it or not. I've been calling them Silicon Community Gardens because they have so many similarities. There are, when you go into like a space and work together, there's a chance for like racial and ethnic class consciousness building. You might interact with people you had never interacted with before, right? People that are neurodivergent, people that are experiencing homelessness or interpersonal violence or whatever is going on in their lives. Working with somebody maybe that's more privileged, it doesn't come from that kind of background. So you have a class consciousness development. Of course, the job thing is a big thing. But I think not everybody is coming in there, obviously, to translate this to employment. I mean, sometimes empowerment can translate to just having a better life, right? You get chosen to lead a project within the organization, and you feel empowered, and you were scared to talk to people. You were scared to stand in front of people before. And now you're doing it, and you can do that in other areas of your life. So I think that there is a lot of individual and community empowerment that can happen. It can bridge from one space to across a large city. I found that in one of the places I was looking at. And it organizes community, so that's within the organization, you're organizing community itself, and then outside you can community organize, right? But sometimes when you are so focused inside because of structural issues, and we'll probably get to that at some point, you're not able to reach out to the community. But very quickly, Free IT Athens, we did a number of outreach projects. I tried to push for that in Athens because I did see that problem, like a lot of people coming in that were, you know, maybe more privileged, or we were weren't hitting certain neighborhoods or demographics that we need to. And as everyone probably knows, is that you know, this term, the digital divide, which is an academic term, but it hits every marginalized population. You think of a marginalized population, they're likely intersected with this concept of the digital divide. But to you.
Yeah, sort of to dovetail on that, Joel, people work not just for money, right? People work for personal fulfillment and things like that. And you talk about community gardens as a model that's very similar to Free Geek. And I find that as well. As a matter of fact, one of our current volunteers that works with us is a community gardener, an organizer in creating one. And he's fell upon an unfortunate time where he can't work his normal job, but he can come and make an impact at Free Geek. And so he puts in quite a few hours and is learning, enjoying that. But that's not necessarily going to turn into some sort of, you know, corporate gig or technology thing. But that certainly has happened for many of our volunteers over the years that come in knowing something, looking for a better life, don't know how to get it, and spending enough time working, learning that they do have this skill or that, you know, this skill isn't something unattainable, right, refurbishing a computer or installing operating systems. But anyone can have it, putting in the time with just a little bit of guidance. And so having those opportunities there for anybody who wants it becomes a real, real changer of their lives. So we have all of those communities you talked about, homeless people, those that have been out of work for a long time, those that are just tech enthusiasts, and people who want to make an impact in their own community. They spend their time willingly with us. We still don't quite know why, but we enjoy it. And so we hope that we can do a whole lot more through that. One of the big things that we've offered throughout the years that we think makes a really big impact in the community is internet access. So from our beginning, as part of our mission, is to guarantee that there's free and open internet access at our location and anytime we're open for anyone to use. So there's restrictions in other public facilities, like public libraries, for instance, where you may be able to go in and use their internet, but you need a device. Or you can go in and use their devices, but for limited time frames. And we try to open that up quite a bit. We have an internet cafe where there's computers there and printers and things like that that you can just use for free as long as you need to. And plenty of people, you know, find their next cars that way, or their next job, or their next loved one. You know, we don't judge. And all of that seems to be a pretty big deal.
Awesome. Thank you. The digital divide is really a four-legged stool. Yeah, you need a device, you need access, you need education, and you need tech support.
Yeah.
The last one is usually the one that kind of falls away. You can get a device, you can get access, you can get a little bit of education, you can get online, but that tech support is really important. A lot of folks don't realize that, especially in rural America, it could be a 2.5 to 4 hour drive to fix a mouse. And this is an area where Google isn't a verb. You know, people don't Google things. They may want to understand something, but they can't Google it because they don't have access, or the access is so slow that you put into Google and then you can walk away, make dinner, come back, and maybe you'll have the answer. But it takes a long time to get access. I guess the next question I would have for the panel would be, what's the difference between what we do as nonprofit refurbishers and the for-profit refurbishers, which is a whole. We battle every day against folks that'll give you $12 for a laptop. And then, of course, once they bring in the laptops and they process them, then they also bill back for that which they cannot turn around. So it actually turns into about a zero-sum game for corporations, but the corporations don't really see that. So I really wanted to get the panel's view on us versus the for-profit refurbishers. And Charlie, you're smiling too much for me to not start with you. So I'm going to start with you.
Okay. Well, we're not making money. So all our tech support is drop-in, not drop-off, donation-based tech support. And that's really, really important. So the donation-based, of course, is really important because you don't know how far these people are coming from. You don't know what they can offer. So a few dollars is great if you can. If not, that's okay. But I think, outside of money, the drop the drop-in rather than drop-off is hugely important, because it becomes not only a community-building opportunity, but an opportunity for education, right? So we, for every tech support session we have, our goal is not only to solve the problem, but hopefully the client leaves knowing more than they did when they walked in. And then it becomes an empowerment opportunity. Yeah.
We've taken, at Free Geek Portland, we started with that, the model of coming in and we do as much as we possibly can for you, but we have so many folks that come in that we started struggling with, you know, how do we take care of all these folks? So we went to a model where we have, and tech support gets a lot of interns. I don't know if you have the same experience, but it's a great launching point, and we have organizations in Portland that are now taking our graduates from our internship programs that will take them directly in and employ them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome.
And they sponsor us for that too, which is awesome. But we've taken and we put a limit on the tech support window of 15 minutes. If it goes beyond 15 minutes, then we've got volunteers that'll do one-on-ones for up to 2 hours. Which is awesome, right? So they, so if you really want to dig into a topic or somebody's really struggling with something, we take them and we put them in the classroom and they just go at it for 2 hours, which is really great. I mean, they move well beyond where they came in that model.
Excellent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the problems that we have in Portland, and I'm sure I'm looking forward to hearing what the panel said. We have spent like 15 minutes together, by the way, so we are just as interested in hearing each other's talks as you guys are to hear our talks. One of the problems we have in Portland is getting corporate donations. When it comes to donations, technology is key for us to turn things around and get them back out. We take in about, like I said, about 1.3 to 1.5 million pounds of e-waste every year, but we can only turn around, this month we did about 30% turnaround on that. We get about 2,000 systems a month. We were only able to turn around about 30% of that, mostly because it comes from folks. And so it's been sitting in somebody's closet, it's been collecting dust, it's a white back Mac.
It's from the 80s.
It's been around for a while, and we can't really turn that around. We must recycle in many, many cases. But from corporations that turn around their technology about every 2 to 3 years, and they're well-maintained, and they sit in an office space, and they're not full of, you know, 10,000 years of cat hair, we can turn those things around pretty quickly and pretty well. But getting those corporate donations are a challenge. A lot of times, corporations will say, well, you know, you're a nonprofit. How do I know that you're professional? How do we know that you're going to, you know, handle our data securely? All of those questions. And we've done a lot in order to make sure that that's true. So we're NAID members. So we make sure that we securely handle everybody's data. Anything that comes in with data, whether it's a Roku or it's a laptop or it's a desktop, it goes directly into our caged off secure area where we clean all the data. If we can't clean it, we destroy it. And we take care of all those things, but getting corporations to believe in us and getting that trust level is really difficult. I'd love to hear the experiences of the panel on that. Brian, please.
Yeah. Gotta love bureaucracy, because in Ontario there's a lot of bureaucracy around electronic waste, because they really tried to make it like a huge environmental promise up there, which meant that for us to become a refurbisher or recycle, we had to be certified by a governmental organization. So that builds an automatic level of trust there a lot of other people don't have to deal with, because we can just point at something saying like, no, this body has said we're okay and that we're following all these rules. We're securely wiping your data. We're locking things up. You know, people who are handling your stuff we have a code of conduct around privacy and security and stuff like that. So there's all these built-in mechanisms that kind of come from just having like a piece of paper on the wall that, you know, somebody checkmarked a couple months ago. But you know, it really that really kind of helps us, and that helps us with going to IT professionals in big corporations where we're making, you know, inroads, where we go to both the marketing and the IT people, because the marketing people were the good publicity, and the IT people know, you know, they kind of, when they dig into us, they know we know what we're talking about. And so those two branches of within a corporation really kind of, if they come together, they really kind of help us. We have had a, I can't really name them here, but like we've had a lot of corporations in Toronto who, you know, they just come and they'll dump their stuff off at us, and it's like really quality stuff. And you know, graphic design firms, by the way, are the best mm-hmm. because they have lots of Macs they're getting rid of every year, and it's all beautiful. But you know, so that's kind of how we've been able to deal with it, is that we really have to kind of, we really try and target it, and we have a large group of supporters and our customers, the people who come in. Like we have, you know, customers from the local school board or something like that who are coming in and then saying like, oh, I'm going to turn around and go to the head of my department and say you should get them, and now we have 100 French keyboards. Mm-hmm. So if anyone needs that, you know. you know, so it's things like that. It's really just kind of making those connections, and it's really kind of telling people, showing people that, you know, this is a community. This is really going to good works. It's not just going to line somebody's pockets. Or, you know, the other big thing for us is that everything gets recycled. The focus is so much on recycling, on just getting rid of the stuff and breaking it down, whereas we're like, no. First thing we need to do, the most environmentally friendly thing to do, is to reuse. Yep. And so we really focus on that messaging, and you know, using the free and open source software and the community involvement and all those packages goes right together, and people just, you know, it's a hard sell, but you know, you get the time, you get some good results.
Yeah. Zach, you want to add?
Yeah, so we almost find that they take you more serious if you charge them. you know, if we offer to come and pick it up for free and something, well, there must be some scam going on. So if you're just getting started and you're having trouble with corporations, you know, charge them a token, and that seems to open more doors.
That's true. It's amazing, isn't
it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We've gone up against national contracts, and we've said, well, we're going to do this for free. You know, we'll do the pickups, we'll take it in, because, you know, if they've got 500,000 people, you know, we figure we're going to get, I don't know, 10,000 laptops a month, and they just don't believe us. You know, that we would want to do that. You know,
we would do anything for free.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Awesome. One of the challenges that we have, all of us have, is the right to repair. Many of these organizations, like Apple, as an example, are very closed. We can't get schematics. We can't get OEM parts. We can't get, we break warranty if we open up the machine. There's a lot of, what we need to do in Portland is we will decompose something, re-engineer it, and bring it back out in order to learn it. And then we pass that on to our other, through iFixit or through others. We try and pass on that knowledge so that we can repair the stuff that we own, because you don't really own it unless you can repair it. So I'd love to hear some of the challenges across the panel in right to repair and what you're doing within your states, for instance, to try and get those laws remade, or in Canada.
I hate glue. Glue is everywhere. Ugh. I guess I'll start. It's an interesting thing, because the laws are a little bit different, where the right to repair, there's a lot of movement around it, especially in like the larger cities, to kind of do it. But you know, the focus for us, like in the States, I think here, is more around like larger equipment, like tractors and stuff like that, and trying to bring in electronics into that. Yep. Sometimes you meet, it's diverging needs. But we partner with a lot of organizations that are really kind of advocating for the right to repair. You know, there's an organization in Toronto, it's part of the Repair Cafe movement, which goes around and like, you know, helps people repair stuff for free. And so we, you know, use them a lot. And, you know, we just try to, through our efforts, do it, but it's tough. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I recently spoke to the Washington Congress, not the United States government, but Washington State, about their right to repair. California's got a bill active, Washington has a bill active. We're working to get a bill active in Oregon as well, to just get right to repair, because it impacts our business so much. Macs are in such great demand, and our ability to get people graduated to the point where they can actually repair them is really difficult. Understanding where stuff is in a desktop and how to repair a desktop is pretty easy. Move them up to laptops, and it's a step above, right? But you get to Macs, and it's like a whole different world. And again, they're in such great demand that we would love to get them out to our community. So many people want to get into graphic arts, or they want to get into those things that the Macs really lend themselves to that we can't bring them out to them. We're coming really close on time here, so I can't believe we only asked a couple of questions and that we got this far. I guess the last question I have, and I'd really like to hear the entire panel on this, is, and then I'm going to open it up to the audience, because you may not have come here to hear about community and how we're working this. You may have come to hear about how to actually refurbish this stuff. But I'd love to hear, how would you challenge this audience? What is the ask you have in 30 seconds, each one of you? What is the ask you have of this audience? What is it that you'd like for them to take back with them when they go back to the real world? Zach, you want to start?
Sure. Well, when you go back out there, feel emboldened and empowered. I think this is probably true of most of the organizations. We started with a hope and a dream, no idea how the next month's rent would be paid or whatever, but we all had a conviction that this was meaningful and a good thing. So if you feel so inclined, find a few people, figure out how to pay rent, find a cheap place, and start doing what you already do out of your own closets and grow it into something a little bit bigger. And if you can help organizations like ours find better equipment and get into our hands, please do. And we'd also love to work with anybody on legislation around this right to repair. In Arkansas, last time it was shot down by Dell and Apple. There's nothing pending today, and we need some help doing that.
I just have some recommendations. If you're going to start one, I would highly recommend doing a community analysis with people, like affected people. So community analysis takes a long time, too. Don't half-ass it. When in this process, be understanding, listen, and step back throughout the whole process. Be inclusive, be welcoming. Understand this is community organizing. It's not a computer or tech club, and that this should be your ultimate goal, right, to meet human and need. Never lose sight of your vision, mission, or your purpose of your project. Ask yourself in every step of the way that you do, every decision you make in an organization, how is this fitting into what we're setting out to do? How is it furthering it? Allow as much as possible service, user, and marginalized population leadership and organizing. Never take money from a funding source that is going against your mission or your vision. And have fun.
Thank you.
So my challenge to you is, so I am not a technical person. I tell people I'm technical adjacent. I'm technical adjacent, I'm around it, but I don't know what I'm doing with it. I have no experience in the nonprofit sector. I've only been volunteering for 2 years, and it's happenstance in how I'm doing what I'm doing today. So if I and my fellow volunteers can make an impact on our community, then every single person in this room is so well equipped to help their fellow neighbors and community members. So I definitely challenge you. And even if it's not starting a Free Geek like organization, listen out. Everyone needs help with fixing their laptop and their devices. You can make a difference. So I challenge you to look for those opportunities.
I think the big thing to take away is that if you're going to start this, remember one key thing: ask for help yourself. There are lots of things that you won't know how to do, and that there are already people in the communities or in large organizations or bureaucracies who will be, have a kind ear to listen to what you want to do and what you want to support, and they can offer guidance and support and intangibles that are not there. You never know, in what pockets of area you'll find somebody who, knows somebody who knows somebody who can, get you in touch with a landlord who's, kind to what you're going to do, or knows a group that, can really get you locked into an actual community that really could use the services that you are going to offer. And, if you're not open to getting help yourself, it's too much harder to do it alone. You got to do it with others.
Excellent point. Yeah, there are 78 nonprofit refurbishers in the United States, and Free Geek is one of them. I have a call probably once a week. I probably spend 1 to 2 hours a week helping other free geeks, helping other nonprofit refurbishers get up and running, advising on everything from policies to procedures to, you know, trainings to education. We freely share our education curriculums. Like I said, we do 6,000 hours of education. We share all of that curriculum. We talk about how to manage the teaching, manage the volunteers that we have, manage the volunteer teachers, how to get public schools involved so that you've got places for the children. You know, our children are remarkably unequipped. 60% of the Portland area schools are not equipped at home in order to do schoolwork. Their parents can't check their grades. They can't talk to their teachers. Homework is always assigned now online. So we talk through how to get involved in that and how to get this information out. So if you are interested in starting one of these up, please reach out. Every one of us would field a phone call. Every one of us would freely share information if that's what you're interested in doing. My challenge to you is go back to your real world. If you're working for those corporations that are out there or working for or have a network that includes that, please talk to them about what we are trying to do. It is a huge benefit for them from a social networking perspective, a corporate social responsibility perspective, but it's also just the right thing to do. We need to refurbish these things and get them out to people that need them. So that is my challenge to you. I am almost completely out of time. If there are any questions from the audience, please, I'd love to hear them.
Hi, I'm the founder of a company called Neverwear, and we kind of set out to do something similar with an operating system. And what we found was that when we tried giving people Linux, there were many people who were very, their eyes kind of glazed over. And when we switched to Chromium and we told people, oh, hey, this is going to turn your 10-year-old computer into a Chromebook, you know, they suddenly connected, especially in schools where, you know, Google is in every single school nowadays. Have you guys, tried or had any success with Chromium?
No, free software is so, so very important.
Yeah.
So, no, haven't touched it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Free software. And it just takes time. You got to sit with people, you know, and they'll adopt. They will. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a little disingenuous to call it a Chromebook also. Just a comment.
We distribute Linux on all of our computers that we put out. We've recently become a Microsoft authorized refurbisher as well. And the reason that we've done that is because a lot of our folks that we're helping get back into the workforce, when they get back into the workforce, they need to have that Microsoft experience. It causes havoc in the shop with all the drivers you've got to have and the updates you've got to have and the virusware you've got to have. I mean, but and we try and explain Linux is on the space station. I think they know what they're doing. And most of our people do accept Linux as we put it out. I'm sorry?
We do, yeah.
We have too.
All of them. Every Mac we sell has Ubuntu on it.
Hey guys, so when I was in school, I volunteered at the Cincinnati Computer Cooperative, the other CCC, and we did a lot of e-waste recycling. We had a lot of problems where we would just, you know, we'd get huge pallets of computers, especially those Macs that are fucking impossible to take apart and get the hard drive out of them. But a lot of the computers that we'd refurbish, and we'd even put Windows on them occasionally because that's what people were used to, we couldn't sell them, you know, things were too slow for people. At what point do you determine when something needs to be recycled versus, sold or given to people? How do you have the discussion. Also, if you have time, like, what's the weirdest thing that you've gotten in? We've got a lot of weird stuff. So
yeah, that's an ongoing thing. Yeah, so we've had this issue at Free Geek Arkansas quite a bit. We had a hard time when we were early on getting things that were performant at all, but we were lucky enough to have enough equipment to draw from now that our benchmark is, if YouTube is not a slideshow, it's an effective machine, right? If you can learn from videos on the internet publicly posted by other people, that's good enough.
Yeah, we do the same thing. We evaluate our spec probably monthly, and right now we're at i5 or i7 and above, 8 gigs.
Lucky.
Jeez.
Someday.
Right.
But what we do with everything else that we get is we palletize it and we put it back out.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're able to get it to other refurbishers that are able to take on that much. We just get too many systems. We can't possibly push them around.
Awesome. Yeah. We're at Core 2 or bust.
Yeah.
Core 2 Duo is here too.
Yeah.
Weirdest
yeah.
one. But a Mac Mini that's still up and running today with PPC Linux.
Yeah. And we do get very cool stuff in. A lot of like the Redback Macs, and we get a lot of ham radio. We get a lot of vintage radio. We've got relationships with clubs throughout the United States that are vintage clubs that take on Commodores, of all things. Yeah, it's kind of amazing the stuff we get in.
I got a computer full of roaches once.
Yeah.
Wasps.
But,
I got wasps.
But this this woman came back with roaches again, which I just gave her another computer. I was like, whatever, you know, we've got an extra one, we'll make sure you get it. But this led to trying to find out like where this person was living, you know, and checking up on them and seeing like, and the place was in really bad shape. So we went try to find that person help, you know. So there are avenues that you don't even expect to happen through just a computer. You know?
Absolutely. I got Top Gun joystick. That's my coolest thing. I got to work.
Yeah, we've gotten like live beehives in computers.
Yep.
We've gotten alcohol. We've gotten guns.
Oh my gosh.
I haven't had that problem.
We had bullets, not guns.
We've had both. Bullets, we've had bullets as well.
Gosh.
Not so much a question, more of a comment. There was recently a ruling from the FTC about warranties and the warranty stickers. It was back in either April or May. That not only the stickers meaningless, but they're also illegal. The various companies that were named in the suit were Microsoft, Nintendo, HTC, and I forget what the other
Sony.
Last one was. Sony. I know Apple wasn't named in it. I'm sure FTC is probably looking at them too. I don't know if you guys have any comments on that as far as right to repair.
Anybody want to feel it?
I mean, the few Macs that we've repaired that might have still had warranty status never then had their warranty exercised after the fact, so we have no real direct knowledge. Usually by the time we see them, there's no warranty still hanging, so.
Yeah, that's usually true for us, too.
Yeah.
We give 6 months of free tech support for anything that's purchased from our store online. We do 1 year of service for anything that we donate or grant to others.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes that go away for us.
So there's often a trade-off between speed on old machines and usability and ease of use. You've mentioned Lubuntu. Is that what most of you have come down on, or is just wondering what distros you've picked?
I feel like I'm unique in the Lubuntu.
I mean, we used it for a register for a while because it was the slowest machine in the whole building. but we stand on Ubuntu. We try to stay on the latest LTS as much as we can. It depends on hardware compatibility.
Linux Mint, because it looks like Windows.
Yeah, no, people love it. People do.
No, it's true. It's so, because it does everything and it looks the exact same, people, like the barrier to entry on it is, they just think it's a green theme. And we have to tell them, no. It's actually something else. But yeah, so Linux Mint, I think we're on 18 too. We haven't gone to 19 yet.
Yep, we're on 18 as well.
Yeah.
Lubuntu was a free IT choice because Ubuntu started the Amazon spy thing, so we wanted to get away from an interface that had that as a default. That was a decision why we used like a different desktop environment, and it's lighter.
Yeah.
It is lighter.
Unity.
So I guess that's a good segue into my question. So I'm curious about how you guys balance usability with getting people into the sort of panopticon of Google and you know, this sort of, how do you deal with that in terms of harm reduction? Like, where do you draw the lines? How do you struggle with it? If you know what I mean? Yeah?
Oh,
Could you, for example, you can help people get into a computer, but then they can quickly sort of get subsumed in advertising and being tracked and sort of have all these other problems that are really counter to the ethos of free software and free as in liberty. Just, maybe you don't struggle with it at all? The answer is no.
No, I'll speak from Portland first, if you guys want to add in. We give classes on that. So part of our, when you come through and you are given a computer or you're getting started class, includes a whole section on security as well as how to safely navigate the internet. And that's the way that we try to do it is through education.
We try to do it through education as well. Most of ours is informal rather than formal, but we do as much as we can with new users getting their first computers to at least let them know that they should look further into these things and don't just click accept on terms of service. I know they're daunting, but they're at least worth a read, and if it makes you want to throw up once, probably say no.
Yeah. I'm sorry we have to wrap this up, but for everyone in our audience and everybody who's going to be watching the archive version of this online later, and who's everybody's there watching the live stream now, how can people get more involved with this? Dan, is there a central point of contact where they can be referred to either a Free Geek or like organization in their community or with resources on how they can start something like this in their community?
Absolutely. We at Free Geek in Portland, we are known as the mothership. So we provide a lot of information if we are ever contacted by anyone. I'm sure the rest of my panelists would also welcome. But if you do info@freegeek.org, you can easily reach us. Also, there's an organization that's out there called AFTR, AFTRR.org. It's part of the Christina Foundation, and they are a consortium of the nonprofit refurbishers across the United States. They're a great source of information as well.
Thank you.
I know, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, very well done.
Sorry, I just went
on track. No,
I'm
glad
track.
You did.
Shaky start.
I would have kept on going.
So the big bump on this, I mean, there weren't a ton of people here, Sunday morning, whatever, but this was streamed,